Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the RUP podcast, where we explore the extraordinary stories, psychology, and deep intricacies of men's mental health. I'm your host, James Roycroft Davis, and I started this podcast after finding myself in a rut, feeling like I was never going to come out. But I did, because I started to talk about how I felt. Our mission is very, very simple. We want to finally get men talking about their issues, talking about their problems, talking about their mental health. There's still way too much stigma around men's mental health, so we want to break down toxic masculinity, one podcast at a time. If we talk, we save lives. It's that simple. Please do remember to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on currently, and leave us a review too, or find us on social media and tag us in your posts and your comments and your feedbacks on episodes. It's so greatly received and we love to see it. So you can find us on social media at the RUP Pod for the latest updates on episodes. Right, let's get on with it, shall we? This week I sit down with reality TV star, fitness entrepreneur, and all-round great guy, David Birtwistle. David featured on Netflix's Too Hot to Handle, which was released in February this year, just before COVID took hold of the world. He runs his own coaching business called Endeavor Life. However, David, whilst growing up a relatively happy kid, was bullied, which led him to finding it difficult to let people into trusting relationships. The journey of self-discovery, self-love, acceptance, but also a little bit of hurt he's been through is amazing. And I'm really, really pleased he opened up about various areas of his life in this episode. We talk about Too Hot to Handle, him growing up, the pressures of social media and reality TV stars and more in this episode. And it's awesome to get his point of view on all of those. So here's David's story. So please leave all judgment at the door. David, how are you? Welcome to the RUP.
Thanks for having me. I'm good, thanks, mate. I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Happy to be chatting with you and deep diving on many wonderful subjects today.
Yeah, well, something both, I suppose, close to our heart, given obviously what you're doing now with Endeavor and how your life has transpired. But actually, we were introduced through your sister Chrissy, so big thanks to Chrissy for doing
Shout
that.
Shout out Chrissy! Yeah. Chrissy B. Legend.
I ask everybody this question who comes on. Why did you want to come on the RUP?
I think it's important to
Barmy begging you.
I think it's important to talk about stuff. Like, having good conversations normalizes a lot of taboo subjects. And so the more people talk, the more the information is shared and it becomes normalized, then everything can be dealt with in a much like easier way. And any problem that I've had, someone might be going through, they can like realize they're not alone. So that's pretty much it, man. It's just like having good conversations, spreading knowledge and hopefully improving someone else's life.
Nice. We had a chat on the phone just before my birthday, actually in June. And you told me about the whole childhood experience growing up and being bullied at school, etc. Take me back to the start of David Birtwistle's adventure up until now. Obviously, we'll get on to Netflix and Too Hot to Handle later, but talk to me about school.
School was... Well, I was born up north and that was fine. I don't remember any issues up there when I was up there. I was quite young. Left, came down with family when I think I was, like, I don't know, 10 or 11 or 12 or something. And then immediately got bullied for having a high voice. Right, like...
Really?
Yeah, like... And I think I must have had a high voice. But if you speak to people that are from, like, Liverpool...
Yeah.
They have relatively, like, elevated voice. It's not, like, a really deep, bassy voice.
No.
Like... And mine was, and when I get excited, my voice pitch goes up anyway, as probably you'll hear in this podcast. But but yeah, so I immediately got bullied for having a weird accent. And then I just found, like, throughout school, I'd just get picked on for stuff. And I couldn't put my finger on it. as to like what it was. It'd be like for anything, you know, and like all kids want to do is fit in. But I don't know, it just was a bit annoying and frustrating to say the least. And so school, it was mixed. It was, I think like school's a weird place, and I'm inherently, what's the word? I think a lot of people will kind of like bow down to other people just because they're scared of standing up for something.
Mm.
That's not me. I will inherently stand up. And like, my mum told me a story. She's like, when you're a kid in like primary school, or is in the playground, and she was like, there was like a kid that was like twice your age, and he was like pushing you over, and you kept like standing up to him, and like you wouldn't like take a back step. And I'm like, I was like 4 or something at the time. So like that is inherently my like psychology. And I think that it was probably partially to do with that is why it was like such trouble when I was at school, because some, you know, a bully might walk down the bus and be like kind of looking at people and seeing who they can pick on or whatever. And half the people will just put their head down and like not make eye contact. And I'll be like, fuck you. You know, like, yeah. Like, stop looking at me like that. Like, and that's partially what it is. And but yeah, it was
where do you think you got that from?
I've no idea, mate. Like, I've no idea, because like my dad and my mum are not like that.
Because yeah, I mean, my that happened at various points to me, and I'm not like you in my reaction. It was just even up until recently, it's been just like kind of take it. And I suppose the kind of belief systems, you put a post on Instagram about your mum actually recently, not to be too stalkerish, but about how she instilled this belief system in you, which was never, ever back down, never give up. And that's kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, both my parents are successful in their own right, and they're both relatively entrepreneurial. They've always just said, like, you can do anything if you put your mind to it.
Yeah,
like your limiting factor is your own self.
Mm.
So give it your best.
Mm.
Like, and they'd always say, like, we don't care what happens, just do your best. And that is like the main thing. So that's kind of like mom and dad both instilled that idea of just the thing that holds you back is yourself. And it's crazy because I never really understood it.
Yeah,
I didn't really get that. And when I was younger, I would just do stuff. And sometimes I'd like be really like focused on it and get into what, you know, people talk about like flow state, where you're just like oblivious to everything else. And you can just completely focus on this one thing. And like, there was times when I'd get into that and I'd just be doing something. And then there was other times when I didn't care at all. And it was, you know, in school, it would be exactly that. If I like cared about a subject, it'd be like, boom,
bang,
I'm so invested in this. Like RE, religious education at GCSE, so we're like talking 15 years old, I was so interested in the idea of religion, mainly because I was focused on picking holes in it. And so I just like constantly ask questions, constantly like intrigued to like have these conversations, and like got like a super high A in my GCSEs in RE.
But that's slightly weird, actually.
I just found it so interesting. Really? I was like, this blows my mind. Like, because, you know, it's like a thing that people care about much. Like, there's a few things that become like absolutes, and religion is one of them, which really divides people.
Mm.
And I find it amazing that it can divide people.
Are
so
you religious
much.
Yourself? No.
No, I struggle with organized religion. If someone wants to believe something,
of course,
I let them. I've no problem with it. I'm more intrigued in spirituality as an idea.
Mm.
And again, this has kind of evolved as I've got older, that now I see, right, and this sounds really like hairy fairy, right, but everything is just energy.
Absolutely.
At the very baseline, everything is energy. And
just moving particles. It's just, we're atoms.
Literally.
That's it.
And some of them you can see. Like, I can see you. You're right there.
If you even, if you took that back even further, you can see me, technically, yes, because we have retinas, which is just obviously moving particles, forming energy, but this is just an experience. Your experience, this podcast, is going to be different to my experience.
Yeah.
But that is an amazing thing.
Yeah, but it is, and that then dives into perspective, which I actually coincidentally commented on in a post that I did this morning, which is that two people can look at the same thing and see something different because of their perspective of that thing. And again, so that's again something crazy, but just taking...
That's also part of the bottom line of anxiety too. Because let's say in a social situation, we might come out of this podcast and I might have said something and then taken it away with me. And if I'm in a state of anxiety or state of fear or panic, I might have thought, fuck, what did I say to David? Shit, why?
Yeah.
Your experience of that, it would have just gone over your head.
Yeah, and that happens. Like, you know, because we brought Chrissy up, my sister, at the start of the podcast. Like, she's lived with me for 6 years, and she's seen me working through various things, and we're business partners. And, like, we'll have conversations with clients or vendors or whatever, and something will be said, and she will think about it and process it, and like, she'll be worried about it. And she's like, how do you just completely move on from something? I'm like, well, like, the thing happened. Can I affect it? No. Can I control it? No. Then I just, it's done and I move on. And it's like two different people, the same situation, but you interpret it differently. And so I think, like, circling right back, spirituality is crazy, because actually when you think about it, there's a bunch of stuff that we are learning every day. Science is evolving and learning every day, and we as human beings are evolving. And there's things which we once didn't know, which we now know. Obviously, everything is learned. That means there can be infinite things we don't know. Therefore, you can never exclude anything. You can't say absolutely not to anything, because it could be, unless it's been proven not to be. But then it could still be proven to be in the future. And so, like, is there a higher power? Don't know. Is there...
higher energy.
Higher energy? You don't know. Is there something other than what you can see, smell, taste, hear, and feel? Potentially. And that could affect your psyche. And so I find it all really amazing. But the idea of, like, constructed, organized, like, regimented religion, I find kind of... interesting. Some of the rules really confuse me.
I want to go back to the kind of the bullying or your perceived experience of bullying at school, because it'd be very, very easy for somebody who has who goes through that experience. I had it myself, which meant that I had various different belief systems about who I thought I was, which again is just a construct of my own imagination anyway. But it's very easy to take on those belief systems. Did you have any of those belief systems as you were growing up? Let's say not good enough, inadequacy. It's a kind of symptom of being bullied, in essence.
Nah, I didn't get that side effect. For me, the side effect is like anger and frustration and
interesting
and irritation and walls and barriers and, like, you know, when I was a kid, really, really young, like, I'm inherently soft and squishy on the inside, right? Like, I've learned that about myself, that I'm an emotional person, and that I'm, at the core of me, I am relatively soft, and I like to be open, and I like to talk about things, etc., etc. But, like, through my teenage years, like, that no one saw. It was hidden behind barriers and walls and a front of being tough and not showing weakness.
Interesting.
So that was something which I realized that I had to kind of do in order to protect myself to a degree.
And how did that percolate into different areas of your life, I suppose? Love life, relationships?
Relationships is multiple complicated conversations, really. but like in a kind of, I think it was like with... friendships, with kind of non-romantic relationships, it would be a lot of like proving yourself as a man, and like whether it's a continuation of the natural tendency for me to stand up against things, like I wouldn't ever take a step back, I wouldn't back down from something. And like as I got into like my teenage years, that just kind of like grew to like having like fights and getting in trouble like that, and almost like thinking that was the only way to protect yourself, because if someone's like constantly on your case and like, you know, being demeaning and talking down to you and like bullying, and like it's one time I got I was in McDonald's, outside McDonald's with my friend in town near where I used to live, and one of the kids that used to bully me at school saw me, walked out, had a fucking milkshake and poured it on my head, right? That was a really shit experience, obviously. Something out of a movie, actually. And but like, how'd you deal with that situation? I mean, in my head at that point, the solution is just like wash it off, ignore as if it never happened, crack on. Like, not to...
There's no time to process it, almost.
Yeah, no. You just... it's just like... just because if I act as if anything affects me, then it's like they won. So you just act as if nothing phases you. Problem is, that makes you kind of numb. It's a tricky one, because like when you're in times of like trouble, and if you're under fire in terms of like emotional barraging of problems, then you have to put up a certain armor against those things. You have to have an armor in those times to protect yourself. Like, looking at it now, I can't be as like, I wasn't emotionally intelligent enough and able to deal with those people at that time. I wasn't smart enough. I didn't know how to deal with it. So the only way to deal with it was to put armor on to protect yourself. But now I'm older and I have the experience that I didn't have when I was back then. Like, now is a completely different environment, because you know the rules of the game. You know how to control it. There is no fear of being like verbally abused continually by the same person. Because if that same person verbally abuses you multiple times, if you're at work or whatever, then you report them. You have HR, you deal with it that way. Or you converse with them about it, or you just leave their life. You're not in their life. Like, there's ways to move through things, and you navigate it as need to. But when you're at school, there's no way to leave that environment. The person is much older than you. You've never had to deal with this before. Like, you deal with it the way you feel like you can at the time. And for me, that was just putting up barriers. And that meant it's hard to kind of let people in, and there's residual effects of that, that it still kind of, for someone to like really kind of come in and get to know me has been harder. But over the kind of past couple of years, and going through a personal development journey, and talking about it, which has been the most important thing, is just talking about it, which is what circles back to why do you want to be on the podcast? Because you talk about things and they lose their weight and they become weightless and they float away, and then the barriers can come down, and then you, and if you're having a conversation, you and I, then you benefit from my experience and I can benefit from your experience, and just having conversations as men is so powerful.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I want to talk about Too Hot to Handle.
All right, what do you want to know?
Well, most people will know the kind of David Burke whistle on Netflix and TV, but actually, towards the end of that, of the show, it was becoming very, very clear that you'd gone through this journey, or that you were becoming a lot softer.
Soft and squishy, mate.
Soft and squishy, precisely. why did you want to go on the show in the first place, actually?
I thought it would be fun.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, like...
Did you know about the... they didn't.
They didn't tell me anything.
Oh my God.
They were so sneaky. They were like, it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. You're going to have a great time. I'm like, okay, what's it about? And they go, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. You're going to have a great time. And I'm like, okay, well, I've seen reality TV before. So if it's going to be shit and aggy, yeah. and drama, and you're just putting me in there to try and get some negative effect, I will just leave. Like, I'm not interested in that. Because before I went on Too Hot to Handle, I already had a business and I already had a small following on social
media.
What
was your following on social media?
It's about 25,000. Okay. So that means I was running my business and using that as a marketing tool.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to do anything to jeopardize my business. It's not worth that. But yeah, they were pretty good. They didn't tell us anything. But what was the question you asked me originally? I can't remember.
No, it was literally why did you go on it?
That was it.
That was it.
I just thought it'd be fun.
Just the experience.
I thought it'd be fun. And I thought at the end of the day, I'll just have a fun story to tell my mates. Because you know, TV flops. Like, there's new shows that come out and they're terrible. Mm. And no one watches them and nothing happens and your life goes exactly the way it was before. So I was like, well, if it flops, I'll just have a cool story to tell my mates.
Yeah, but you must have known this is going to be aired on Netflix to the whole world. There's what, 190 million people subscribed to Netflix now? Like, you going on that show was not going to be, if it fails, yeah, I'll just go back to my day job.
Well, it kind of, you don't know what it's going to be like. Like, they bring out new shows all the time.
Mm.
Like, some people like them, some people don't. And honestly, like, it could be, you could get a huge following of people that you can't create a career from them following you. You know, there's a lot of women out there that have huge followings that can't sell anything because all they do is have bikini photos up. Like, they can do OnlyFans, but probably I'm not doing OnlyFans. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, let's, you know, it might work, it might not, but you just don't know. There's a risk.
How did you find that show?
From filming it,
experience perspective. I mean, I've written down a few quotes here from that first episode. I'm really sorry to embarrass you like this.
Okay, but caveat, before you say the quotes, they're probably from the video cutscene.
Yeah, they are. VT.
The VT, which was, let's say, hyped up.
Okay.
Is it? It's like, come on, let's bring out the most excessive stuff that we can get you to say, and
like,
we'll film that.
Loves a sex party. Basically, I just walk into a bar and I take my shirt off, and that's it.
Yeah. See, would I really ever
was that the real David Birtwistle back then?
Like, you know, there's parts of your personality, right? So the world likes to put people in small boxes, and like they go, okay, you're David and you do fitness, okay? And you're James and you do a podcast, right? And so-and-so does such and such, and that's it. That's your little niche thing. Whereas people are much more well-rounded.
Absolutely.
Much more broad spectrum of interests. And so you can both have an interest in love and affection and sex, right? And you can both have an interest in, like, I don't know, cars and painting. Like, but what would work at the start of a show like this is obviously, let's make David look like a massive twat.
But those words came out of your mouth.
They did. Because to be fair, sex parties are fun.
Yes.
And I had probably had walked into not in England. But like, I don't know, if you're at like a beach bar or something, like, I take my shirt off because I don't think I should wear clothes very often. Like, it's good to be naked. I think the more people are naked,
exactly,
then the more freedom everyone feels, right? Mm. It was actually, I did Sail Week Croatia with some friends, right?
Mm.
Which is like 5 days on a boat and you go around some Croatian islands and it is so much fun. And I literally wore budgie smugglers for like 5 days, right? Just like a speedo. And I felt more liberated and free.
It's interesting how that's accepted. not the whole budgie smugglers. I also am a keen fan of budgie smugglers.
Right.
But you go on holiday and actually general nakedness or being half naked is just normal. The done thing. It's normalised.
Girls wear thongs.
Yeah.
The whole time.
The whole time.
It's not, you can't do that in Tappan.
No, you can't.
No. And it's interesting because I genuinely feel that if people were more naked more often with other people, or not completely naked, but like more skin was showing, people would see a broader spectrum of bodies. They would feel more normal about their own body. We would see the human race for what it is. We wouldn't just see one small isolated kind of airbrushed perfection. And but also you just feel more comfortable in your own skin.
Mm.
Like I would always wear shorts up to my knee before then. Mm. And then I wore budgies and it felt weird for about 10 minutes. And then I forgot about it. And I was just like, this is me. I feel awesome.
Two Hot Handle is interesting for you personally, actually, from a outsider looking at it, so from my perspective watching it, because, and I actually said this to Chrissy when I first started speaking to her about you, and I was like, you were the first person who really comes on the screen, and apart from Sharon, I think, talking about how his dick's the size of a...
Yes, he does say that.
Yeah, is monstrous. But it was very clear that you were going through your own like transformation out there, actually.
It was, I'll be honest, that show came at the perfect time.
Why?
Because for the 6 months before we filmed it, I was already engaged in a personal development journey.
Interesting.
I was already speaking to a coach. Okay. I was already like interested about how I could expand my mind. And so literally like being in an isolated environment for 4 weeks, kind of going through therapy, was like, oh my God, this couldn't be any better.
Kind of going through therapy, what do you mean?
Well, like all of the workshops that we did were like therapy.
Mm.
They were like making us think about our thoughts and feelings and emotions and putting us in situations that could help us work through any past trauma and grow as a human being. And the whole point of the show was to enable you to create deeper, more meaningful connections with people.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like therapy.
It is.
It helps you deal with old trauma and grow into a more open, accepting version of who you are.
And what did you learn?
That's a very open question. Yeah,
but...
I'd say like the main thing for me was from like a romantic position. Like you asked about what barriers do you create earlier. And like for me, letting people in was a big thing. Mm. Like, and especially romantic relationships. So I had these huge walls up and almost was like stopping myself from feeling too deeply. But then doing the show, I very much realized that at my core, what I do want is that like love and affection and more than just like one night stands and like casual dates and stuff like that. So that was the main thing that I kind of took away from it, and to also be more open.
Mm. I want to go back to the moment in like, I don't know what episode it was. This might have been the last workshop or with Rhonda, and you started crying.
Yeah.
I think that was the moment where, having seen this like David Burt whistle bravado that we've all watched for like 7 episodes before, to see this guy just break down in tears and really be the only person who kind of visibly on TV or like, apart from Sharon a little bit, but who wasn't that focused on the money, who quickly began, obviously it was annoying you, various people, fucking that pot up. But you go actually getting more and more out of that journey. Like, take me back to that moment where you're standing there in front of Rhonda.
Yeah.
Like, what was going through your head?
Well, so the workshop was the staring, right? So we had to stare into each other's eyes for 5 minutes and not say anything, not avert their gaze. It is awkward to start with. If you ever try looking at someone for too long, you feel awkward. But if you push through that, then it's supposed to unlock a deeper kind of understanding of that person. And effectively, for me, I just started to piece together all the pieces of information that Rhonda had told me about herself, who she was, her life, her history, and the things that I know about her.
Mm.
And I just got overwhelmed with this emotion that she is a really like amazing person, very calm and generous and outgoing and bubbly. And she's had to deal with a lot of struggles in her own life. And I just had this sense of like, awareness of who she was, and it just kind of got overpowering. And yeah, there was like a moment of like, okay, you're feeling something, you have the choice of either leaning into what it is or shutting it off. And I'd kind of made the decision in my head that I'm gonna commit fully to this process, that if you Like, it doesn't matter what happens, just do your best, like mum and dad would say. So if you're in a position where the point of it is to create these deeper connections, then do the thing which is going to allow that. Like, commit to what you're doing. So I just thought to myself really quickly in my head, like, don't hold back, don't try and cut it off, just be open and honest and present. And that was the then effect. You see, like, I was crying, and then I kind of explained to Rhonda why. And that was quite intimidating when I've got the entire cast and crew around me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in the back of my head going, yeah, that's going to go out to Netflix to 190 million people.
It's funny you say that, actually, because, well, my sister also watched that, and I said to her, I was coming here today, and she was like, can you ask David, in fact, she's going to love that I mentioned this. Did David find his mental health was affected entering into an environment that he was always being filmed? Essentially, did you ever feel insecure?
I didn't feel insecure, but it is weird being filmed all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Just because you know that there's, like, everything is being filmed, and you kind of have to get used to that. And it does fade. It's interesting. You kind of get used to it after a couple of days. But, like, you know, I was always kind of acutely aware at the back of my head that there are cameras. Like, you can see them. They're not hidden to us. We could see them. They're, like, on the wall or wherever. And if it was, like, a big scene where they had, like, the bigger cameras that weren't flying the wall, then it's, like, there's a camera right there, you know? So it's not like you're hiding from it. But, yeah, as far as mental health, I think because I'd made the decision to be myself, to live into who I am, to embrace
being in the present,
everything,
right?
And not overthink it, that there wasn't, like, a doubt about anything. It was just be you. And actually, I'm so glad that I was that person, because if I had done the show 10 years ago and those barriers were up, then it'd be a completely different response. Yeah. You know, people would have seen a different side to me. Whereas actually I was, like, so ready for what the show was about.
Obviously, the show's aired, what, February, March this year?
It was actually May, April.
April, right.
Something like that.
Yeah. Under normal circumstances, your profile, you'd be doing, I presume you'd be doing club appearances up and down the country and really maximising all of the revenue that comes from being on a reality TV show overnight.
Yeah, apparently that's what Love Island people do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't done that.
No.
Corona.
Precisely. How has that impacted you? Because obviously you've come out of Too Hot to Handle. When this was filmed, what, 20...
It was a year before it aired, so it was
March
and April 2019.
So you're probably thinking... Right, this could really improve Endeavour. I'm going to have access to so many more millions of people. Obviously, your overnight social media channels just ballooned, I imagine, once it aired. But you haven't really seen the kind of levels of exposure as some other reality TV stars have had. Like, how was that for you?
It's been a really weird experience. As far as, like, the exposure in terms of, like, a financial benefit of being involved in a show like this, we've got a worldwide pandemic, and so everything's shut down. And whereas, like, the guys that do Love Island would make six figures in a few months from doing club appearances and personal appearances and endorsements and all that kind of stuff, very quickly making a lot of money, like, that hasn't happened for myself or most of the other cast. Because, you know, we're in a pandemic. How have I handled it? I mean, it's been interesting. There's been learning experiences. For me, I'm very much trying to just think about myself exactly how I always have. And behave as if I always have. And not to really try and be anything that I'm not. Sometimes I get it wrong, though. You know, like, I forget how many people see my stuff sometimes.
Right, okay.
Right, like...
What are you referring to there, get it wrong?
Like, if you have 1 million people that look at something you say, and only 1% find it offensive, that's still a lot of people that find it offensive. And not that I've been like deliberately.
It's 1,000 people.
It's a lot, right? You know, like we were in lockdown and I posted a photo of me and Nicole on Clapham Common, right? So it was the rules, I think, at the time were that you weren't supposed to be within 2 meters from someone you don't live with. And Nicole and I didn't live with each other. And I completely forgot about that rule. And I was giving Nicole a hug and I posted that photo. And then the Daily Mail thought, or someone thought, some newspaper were like...
I saw the article, yeah.
You shouldn't be doing that. David Burks or breaks curfew.
Flouncing lockdown rules,
like,
yeah.
Who does he think he is? And people are like, you're such an arrogant prick for doing that. And I'm like, I completely, like, it was in my head. I'm like, I'm just posted a photo of my friend. Not thinking how many people are going to see it. And so that's something I have to kind of consider, because I think it's important if you... You have to be down to earth. And I don't want to ever think, like, I kind of think of it, right, as like, some people just know who I am, right? That's it. I'm no different to anybody else.
No, of course. Right?
Some people know who I am, and that's it. And I think that it's important to think like you're small time. Think like you're just a person grafting, because... With nothing comes easy, you know. You can have step ups and things, but actually, like, you still have to graft. Like, it's not that my life is really much different to what it was before. I can have some opportunities and certain doors get opened, but I have to working for what I'm trying to achieve. You know, like, we're filming this. It's 6:45. After this, I've got 2 hours of calls to make to prospective clients for Endeavor. Like, it's not that. Oh yeah, he was on that TV show, therefore he's making loads of money.
No,
therefore, like, life's cushy and easy. It's like, no. Well, it might be for some people if they want to do that, but I don't want to do that. Like, I want to be proud of the work that I do. I want to be putting in the graft and continuing to grow, because I'm only 30 and I've got plenty of years left, and I want to make sure that what I do is something that my kids can be proud of and my parents can be proud of, and that is not going to happen if I sit on my ass and do nothing, you know. So yeah, you've got to work for everything you want to achieve, because it's not going to come easy. And even if you think like, oh yeah, no, you're probably going to be really good at that, if you rest on the idea that you might be good at something, then you're not going to be good at it. You have to work for everything.
You have to explore it, absolutely. We spoke about the kind of overnight, I suppose, fame, like going from 20,000, was it, followers to 1 million literally overnight. I want to talk a bit more about social media, because it's such a big topic, especially with what the government's just brought out in terms of what legislation they're looking at, that people with certain followings, if they post a photo on Instagram and it's edited, they have to say that it is edited.
Really?
Yeah. If you've not seen, like, okay, interesting. This is a great reaction, because you haven't
have no
seen
idea.
It.
No.
What's your immediate reaction to that?
The first thing would be, what qualifies as edited? Is it put it into Lightroom and changing the contrast ratios and changing the color saturation and things like that? Or is it Photoshop? Where you can literally change the contours of someone's body.
I think it's more that, the latter.
I would think that's really good. I don't Photoshop any of my stuff.
No, of course.
I use Adobe Lightroom to edit the, like I mentioned, saturation and like contrast and things like that to make a photo pop. So it's more eye-catching.
Yeah.
So it's not dull or something like that. But as far as changing the physical shape of your body, removing blemishes, like making your abs pop more, putting fake abs on someone, making your boobs bigger, that's not right. That's not real. That's not what people look like.
But there's a lot of social media influencers out there that do this. Obviously, social media for them is a business, right? But also, there's this type of, I can imagine from the outside looking in, and I might be completely wrong here, but you're going to know way more influencers than me. There's going to be people out there who do it because they are slightly insecure. They feel like they get this dopamine release off the amount of likes. Like, I can imagine some people are like, God, I need to get 100,000 likes on this post or comments. Like, the pressures of that, what is your opinion on the pressures of social media, especially also on girls, actually?
Yeah, it's, I think it's tricky, to be honest. The if someone is a full-time influencer, aka they make their entire living off of social media, advertising stuff, collaborations, etc., then the pressure is for them to constantly post content which will get engagement. And it depends on what their content is that they post, but let's say they're a lifestyle blogger and they, you know, they're relatively attractive, and the thing that gets them engagement is when they post in a bikini, and in order to feel confident, then they change some of the, like, make their waist smaller or something like that. Like, there is definitely a certain pressure to conform to what society wants if the metric of how much you get paid is based on your engagement percentage.
Yeah.
Say you have 100,000 followers and you get 5,000 likes on a post, then that's 5% engagement, right? That's pretty good, to be honest. Like, 3% engagement is like average. You're above that, it's pretty good. You know, if you've got like 10%, it's incredible, like ridiculous. So like you'll get paid based on your engagement, because a brand will attribute your value to your engagement rate and how much they can make off that. So
are you how far into that world are you?
I just did a post the other day for ASOS. That was my first, like, I suppose, fashion advertisement. And it did really well, actually. I was actually really happy with it. Like, this is the thing, like, you know, I got my contract just basically had like one post, right? And obviously you could just like post a photo in their clothes and like a caption or whatever, and same. I was like, nah, I want to do something fun. So I got my videographer to come in, and we shot this video with like a bunch of different transitions, some music on. And I was like, that's a fun video. Mm. And it was like less that I was like, yo, buy all this stuff, and more like that was a fun afternoon I spent with my mate making a video. So it's, you can do it two different ways, and it's, yeah, but that got crazy engagement. I didn't anticipate that at all. It's had something like, I looked at it, it was about 900,000 views.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Which is mental.
Mental.
This comes back to me earlier when I said about how many people see my stuff and I forget it.
Mm.
900,000 people is mental.
Do you ever find your mental health suffers from social media?
Yeah.
Yeah, how?
Fact. Really? It definitely does. And I caught myself the other day, because I'd got into the habit of waking up and going onto Instagram quickly and checking the engagement on my recent post, if I had any messages, if there's any comments, and then checking my emails and seeing if there's any stuff I need to do on that, like, immediately when I woke up. And I caught myself doing it, and I was like, David, that's a bad habit.
It is.
Really bad. Because it just causes anxiety. The first thing with your emails, if you can't deal with the email, don't look at it. Right?
Yeah.
Because then you're just constantly thinking like, oh my God, I need to do that thing. Don't look at the email unless you can actually answer the email and sort the thing out that needs to be sorted. And with Instagram, it's like, to wake up and then be kind of shown these things that are, you know, they could be curated, they could be edited, they could be aspirational, inspirational, whatever, to have an initial external impact on your brain straight away in the morning, not good.
Not good.
You need to think about what you got to do. And so that's something I kind of found myself out doing the other day. The thing that was the worst, though, was when I woke up and went on TikTok for like, it was a Sunday. I woke up and I was just chilling in bed. I never just chill in bed in the morning, but I did it that day. And I got up and I felt anxious for
Why?
Like 3 hours, because it was seeing so many people doing such cool stuff. And I not really posted anything on TikTok for like months. And it was that anxiety of, I should be doing more.
Yeah.
I should be doing better.
I get that with this podcast. I look at people who are like, for me, well, this is obviously the big saying, comparison is a thief of joy, right? It absolutely is. You just end up comparing yourself to to, you're basically judging yourself on this judgment, which is just a figment of your imagination, essentially. It's your mind playing tricks on you, and then determining immediately in that instance you're not good enough.
Yeah.
Feeling of inadequacy. Is savage.
It is.
It's brutal. Like I have to often have to like stop and be like, honestly, what's just gone through your mind?
Yeah, you have to be really careful with it.
It's really careful.
That was yeah. So I don't do that, and it's people. My friends actually comment on this a lot because I don't watch anyone's stories on Instagram. Like. And my friends know I don't watch their stories. So they'll then send me stuff like, oh, did you see? Oh, no, you didn't see that thing on my story. Yeah. Did you? Here. And they'll like show me a video that they made from the other day. Because I deliberately don't do it because I don't want to kind of get sucked into constantly seeing these things of other people. I think like social media can be really cool, really powerful, really inspirational. But you've got to be A, careful of the people you follow. That they're putting out content which is beneficial and inspirational and engaging, but also like don't spend too long on it because it's like entertainment. You know, it's like your mum was like, don't watch TV for too long. It's like, well, don't go on social media for too long. Like, go on social media for a bit, but it's not, the real world's outside, but out the window, out the door.
It's only going to be you that makes your reality. Well, your experience turn into reality.
Yeah, exactly.
So, how do you stop yourself comparing? I appreciate we're running out of time, but how do you stop yourself from how do you stop comparing yourself to other people in that moment?
In the moment, if I find that I am getting anxious because I'm looking at someone else's stuff, it'll be because I'm not taking action to do something I know I should do. Anxiety, when I found, for me personally, anxiety is when I should be doing something and I'm not doing it. And my subconscious is being like, Dave, wake up, mate, you need to do something. And I'll have to like think back about what it is that I know I should have been doing. So it might have been that I wasn't happy in my, like a post that I did, I know that I should have done better in it. And so I'll then, instead of comparing myself to the other person, I'll use them as inspiration. I'll like look at him and be like, what do I objectively enjoy about this piece of content? Is it the style which it's shot? Is it the way they've transitioned from one place to the next? Is it the music? Like, what can I take from this that inspires me to be better? Not, what can I take from this that makes me feel like shit? And so it is just that shift. And then I take that thing and be like, right, I'm gonna take this piece of inspiration and I'm going to action it into making me a better person at the thing that I'm going to do. So it's just that reframing for me of taking something that would pull me down and being like, actually, if I flip that and go, what is cool? What do I like? And then I'm going to use that inspiration to move me forward.
It's fascinating. I've got a quick fire round for you.
Let's go.
Didn't tell you the questions purposely, which is great. Five questions.
All right.
Max 30 seconds to a minute, and we've got about 5 minutes left.
Let's do it.
So, number one, what's your favourite book and why?
The Master of Masculinity by Lewis Howe, because he very accurately describes how men wear masks to protect themselves and to live into who they think they should be as a man.
I've not read that. Lewis Howe's the author of, is it School of Greatness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Talks about like the athletic mask, the aggressive mask, the stoic mask, like all these different ways that men feel that they should behave in order to be a man. And actually, if you take off that mask, you show your true face.
What lesson have you learned in your life that you know is true, but you kind of hate?
eat your veggies. Like, it's a, like mum would tell me, she's like, you've got to eat your vegetables. And like now it's like one of the most common things that I say to clients. I'm like, eat more vegetables, they're so good for
that
you.
That wasn't the lesson I thought you were going to say, actually. There's been some quite deep and philosophical lessons that have been that people have said.
Yeah, no, I don't know, that was just the one that popped into my head because I've been saying it a lot recently.
Fair.
What is another lesson? is...
No, we can go with that, honestly. Well,
that was the one that first popped into her, but it was actually, I did a post about this the other day, and it is, don't be anything but yourself.
That was the story with the kid, right?
Yeah. Don't try and be anything you're not to impress people. Just be who you are, unapologetically you.
Mm.
And because you're the best person.
And that comes from, well, you have to work out who you is first and why this is making you feel uncomfortable to be you.
Yeah, exactly. That's
a story for another day. Your friend who's having a tough time at the moment picks up the phone, rings you, and says he's having a really bad day today. What do you say?
How can I help? Would be what I would say. I'd ask how I can help. Do you want to come round? Let's have a coffee.
Mm.
Like, talk, listen, find out why. Like, let him talk, because often you will sort the problem yourself from talking about it. You don't always need someone's opinion, but like using, just talking through things will allow you to process and understand and come to a resolution yourself anyway. But I'm like a solutions person. So I'm like,
same.
You present me a problem, I'll give you the answer of how to solve it, or I'll figure out how to solve it. So
sympathy, not empathy. Segues nicely into the fourth. When you're struggling with something, struggling yourself, what's your go-to? Who do you turn to improve things?
My mate, Josh. Talk to him about everything and anything that's difficult in life. And I talk to him because he will always listen non-judgmentally. And he'll always ask questions because he's intrigued to know the answer, not because...
Fabulous trait.
He's trying to lead you anywhere. Mm. He just wants to know the answer. And being non-judgmental is so key.
Very nice. You're lying on your deathbed, looking back at your life. What are you most proud of?
Right now, the thing I'm most proud of is my engineering degree.
Like, really?
Yeah. I am proud to have a first-class honours degree in petroleum engineering, because I hadn't studied maths or science since GCSE when I was 15. And then at 24, I went back to university and did a foundation year in science, then a 3-year degree. And I worked throughout the whole time and I supported myself the whole time. And it was something that I've applied myself to and consistently done, lived my life exactly how I wanted to do it, and achieved like a 79%. So I was like, I'm proud of that. I did my best.
Very nice. Wow. David, thank you so much for your time.
That's all right. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely loved it.
Cheers, mate. It's been a good chat. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no. Thank you. Take care.
I absolutely loved recording with David. His honesty, candidness, and openness to discuss the often quite harsh realities of living life in a public spotlight and reality TV are so refreshing to see and hear about. I think we see people go on to Love Island or Too Hot to Handle, for example, and we assume that life after the shows are pretty rosy. You're doing club appearances, signing brand sponsorship deals, and in essence you turn up and get paid. But actually, it's really not like that at all. David's a real grafter. He's very grounded and very, very different, I think. So I hope you enjoyed his perspective, enjoyed listening to his perspective as much as I did. Next week, TV presenter and celebrity publicist, and a man who is regarded as probably one of the most connected people in British show business, Nick Ead joins me to reveal his battles with grief, suicide ideation, and eating disorders. It is an unbelievable listen. See you next week.